Translation. O Supreme Form, we are always servants of your servants, especially of Narad Muni. Now give us permission to leave for our home. It is by the grace and mercy of Narad Muni that we have been able to see you face to face. Unless delivered, or blessed by a devotee, one cannot realize that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Manushanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. According to this verse of Bhagavad Gita 7.3, there are many siddhas or yogis who cannot understand Krishna. Instead, they misunderstand him. But if one takes shelter of a devotee descending from the parampara system of Narad, Swayambhu Narad Shambhu, one can then understand who is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this age, many pseudo-incarnations are advertised simply by having exhibited some magical performances. But except for persons who are servants of Narad and other servants of Krishna, no one can understand who is God and who is not. This is confirmed by Narottam Das Thakur, Chadiya Vaishnav Seva Nishtarapai Che Keba. No one is delivered from the material conception of life unless favored by a Vaishnav. Others can never understand, neither by speculation nor by any other bodily or mental gymnastics. Om Agyana Timaranda Shaganjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Munitam Jena Tasmashi Gurave Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanshikalpatrubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Paritanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. We have our old friend again. It's that word again, understand. We heard that word a few days ago. Somebody came up to me, devotee goes, Prabhu, I'm trying to understand the understanding. Do I understand the understanding? What is my understanding of understand? So that is the question. What is our understanding? Because whatever it is, that's what we'll settle for, isn't it? We'll say, well, I understand. Do you know the story about the birds wanted to make a nest? They all got together because the blackbird could make a roof on its nest. And so all the birds got together and they asked the blackbird. So the blackbird took a twig and it said, well, you take a twig and you put a twig like this. And then you put it. And as soon as you said that, the first two birds on the front row, there's two robins, one looked at the other one and he said, we've seen this, we know all this. And they flew off. And the other birds were getting a bit uncomfortable now, you know. And then the blackbird said, and then you take another twig and then you put another one on top of that. And then another two birds, they said, we know this. And they flew off. And anyway, the blackbird kept going. And there's one point where the nest actually has a roof on it because no other bird apart from the blackbird builds a nest with a roof on. So anyway, the blackbird, he's just about putting the final branch and he goes, and then you put this branch and then that makes the roof. And then he looked around. And there was no birds left. So that's why only the blackbird knows how to make a nest with a roof on it. But the interesting thing is that they didn't stay long enough because they thought they understood. They decided that they'd understood now. So they didn't carry on. They didn't continue. It's a little bit like that when you're chanting. If you chant four rounds, there's a certain level of understanding. And then you can think, I've had enough. And then usually after eight rounds, if you look around in the temple room, you'll see that the eight round is the crucial factor. A lot of them just, no, I have to look at my phone. I have to go. And they run out, you know. And then 12 rounds, it's only the real stalwarts. And then through to 16 rounds. And then if you do 32 and then you do 64, then you get to see, you get to understand more. So it's an interesting word, understanding, because what do we settle for? I was listening this morning, it was a Japa seminar. And just before Sridhar Maharaj died, he was telling this Mataji, Lakshmi Moni, he said that I heard that when you die, you go back to the spiritual world and you see Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada takes you by the hand. And then he takes you over to Krishna, and he puts your hand in Krishna's, and then he goes away, and he leaves you with Krishna. So you could say that when that happens, then you understand. Or you're just beginning to understand Krishna. Up until then, we're trying to understand. We're aspiring devotees, we're trying to. So when we hear the word understand, me personally being very superficial, I think, oh, well, that's not, you know, I understand. Prabhupada's not talking about me, you know. So what's interesting about the word understand, actually, it's a kind of paradox, is the more that you realize that you don't understand is the more that you understand. Isn't that interesting? Because that would seem, it's like sitting down to a meal, and the more you eat it, the hungrier you get. Seems to defeat the object, doesn't it? But Einstein said that the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. Because you can become more aware of how complex the universe is, then you realize how small you are, and then how little you know as you become more. So your understanding is that you become more aware of how, what you don't understand. Then you know you're making progress. So that could be confusing. But then if you're feeling like that, there's so little I understand, then you become humble. And the essence of knowledge is humility. It's not that you become really learned now, and now you just start pushing people out the way. You know, you're in the prasadam queue and you tap them on the Haribol Prabhu. How many books did you do yesterday? 10? Prabhu? 150? Back of the queue's there, Prabhu. You know? You're making progress now. You're becoming advanced. People are becoming less important. So you know you're getting somewhere in life, you know. But actually, real understanding, then you're feeling like you're lower, you know. No, you should go in front of me. I know you only did 10 books, but you did them so much nicer than I did my 150. And it's only because I bewilder people, or they're frightened of me, that they take the books. But you're doing it out of purity, you know. This is real understanding, that we're always able to take the humble position. Anyway, this is very theoretical for me. I'm just trying to. So, interestingly enough, when we talk about knowledge and understanding, in chapter 13 of the Bhagavad Gita, text 8, through to, there's a few verses, and Krishna describes all these qualities: humility, non-violence, perception of the evil of the repetition of birth and death. And then he says, besides these, whatever there may be is ignorance. Even if you have a degree in the anatomy of the red ant, or you know how to fix a kettle with your eyes closed and one arm behind your back, and you know, you can think, this guy's really together, you know. This guy's so clever. But it's ignorance, because it's just increasing your misunderstanding of what life and reality is all about. And real knowledge isn't PhD and ABC and 1, 2, 3. Real knowledge is qualities start developing. Then you have knowledge, humility is coming. Then we know this person is very learned, because he's very humble. So I have a question, just to wake everybody up from boring them all with all that, is why does Srila Prabhupada say, bodily gymnastics? He says towards the end, he says, one can never understand, neither by speculation, nor by any other bodily or mental gymnastics. Now, why would Prabhupada say that? Because, you know, if I said to you, I've got this really difficult thing I'm trying to work out, and then you say, just give me a second, and then you jump up onto this bar and you swing around it a few times, and then you bounce off the roof, spring over that wall, bounce on that wall, then do a triple back somersault, then land, and then go, I think I understand now. You know, why would you do that? Why would you do bodily gymnastics to understand? Why would Prabhupada mention? Because is there any example of anyone using bodily gymnastics to understand something?
Without physical strength, you cannot become self-realized. Oh. That was Vivekananda's philosophy. So he said, better to play football than to read Bhagavad Gita, according to Prabhupada. But for Prabhupada, Bala means Balaram, without the mercy of Balaram. And the second half of the sentence is the similar verse, but Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labyon Namediana Bhuna Shritina. How you can't understand by
physical prowess.
By mental prowess as well.
Yeah, yeah. So okay, that's interesting.
It's
very
two
nice.
Two similar Sanskrit slokas, and they're kind of combined together in the final statements.
Very nice, thank you. Yes?
The practical example came to my mind. I think it's a good analogy. It's the bicycle, gym bicycle. You run, but you don't go anywhere.
Yeah, you put a lot of effort, physical effort, but you don't get anywhere. Yeah. And you were going to say also, one of the matches you were going to say?
Say that you can achieve self-realization by practicing Hatha Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, and there's so many systems of bodily yoga.
So interesting. Prabhupada chooses his words very carefully. And also I thought what was interesting was he's lumped mental gymnastics in with bodily gymnastics. So you're doing all these final things on your bicycle, or you're doing your yoga, or you're bouncing off the roof. And then you just do it mentally. You do the whole thing subtly. Like, you know, somebody could be a really, you know, advanced professor and he's got loads of PhDs and he's doing all this. And then he says, and my conclusion is, but it's just like a total speculation. So whether he does some external gymnastic or he does some subtle gymnastic, it's all just gymnastics. It's all just like funky maneuvers. It's not going to force Krishna to reveal himself or help you to understand. So he's grouped the two together. He said mental or bodily. It's all just jumping around and wasting your time. So I thought that was clever the way Prabhupada did that. So interesting enough also, material energy is referred to as Juratma, which means impossible. Impossible to understand. So the wall of illusion is so convincing. I remember a devotee described once, I always remember this, this is a really good meditation for japa. If everybody just wants to make sure that they're not going to faint or collapse if they're sitting reasonably securely, because when I say this, your socks may blow off, you may pass out, you may lose consciousness, just be prepared for this. This is where a devotee said to me, it was life transforming. He said that when you're chanting japa, it's like standing in front of a jewelry shop. And then when you're standing in front of the jewelry shop, there's two things you can look at. One is the jewelry, and the other is the reflection of yourself on the pane of glass. So the wall of illusion stands there, and we're trying to focus on Krishna, we're trying to hear Krishna's name. And do we hear Krishna's name, or are we just looking at our mind, just looking at our reflection of ourselves? So you have to focus beyond the glare of the material energy to be able to focus on Krishna. But the ability to do that is actually, Krishna admits himself, he says, because I made the material energy, it's impossible to overcome unless I help you. Or as Prabhupada's making the point in the purport, unless Krishna's devotee helps you. So it's very, very, we're very dependent upon that help and that intervention, otherwise it's not possible. And then Prabhupada says, not understanding is bad. And then he also says misunderstanding. So he refers to misunderstanding. He says, are advertised, simply exhibited, but except for persons who are... This is confirmed. So misunderstanding, there's understanding, and then there's misunderstanding. So the problem with misunderstanding... Well, if I was to ask you the question, why is misunderstanding worse than not understanding? If you just don't understand, if I come up to somebody and say, do you understand Krishna? And he's never heard of Krishna. And then I get hold of somebody else and he knows all about, but he's misunderstood. So why is it worse? Why is misunderstanding worse than not understanding Krishna? Yeah. You're snookered once you've misunderstood, yeah?
Isha Upanishad says that worse than ignorance is the culture of so-called knowledge.
Yeah.
Darkest regions of hell for that one.
Yeah, yeah. So it's quite heavy, yeah. And it reminds me of Prabhupada said, don't become misfortunate. Because you could be unfortunate, and that's bad. But worse than unfortunate is misfortunate, because you get it, and then you, you're like these people who win the lottery, and they just they go bananas, and then they're worse off than where they spend it all, and you know they end up killing themselves in the car crash, and their wife leaves for somebody else, and they end up a heroin addict or whatever, you know, all kinds of crazy things, but they end up worse. They lose the good fortune, so they become misfortunate. They miss the opportunity. So that's worse, actually, because once you've missed the boat, it's much more difficult, isn't it, than just trying to wait for the boat. So we also have to think as devotees that I have to be okay right now. I'm in a fortunate position. But we see on the rocky road back home, back to Godhead, that not everybody stays. When I was on the Bhakta program, we had 30 Bhaktas at Chaitanya College in 82. And we had a real... It was such a turnover. If you came back in 3 months, it was still 30 on the Bhakta program, but you could only recognize 2 faces. They were coming as quick as they were going. It was like a big turnover. And I was looking around and I was thinking, this Krishna consciousness isn't as easy as you think, because they're going as quick as they're coming, you know. So we have to safeguard ourselves that I'm fortunate right now. But and I understand to some degree Krishna, but I have to be careful that I don't at some point misunderstand Krishna, or I don't at some point become misfortunate. And to misunderstand Krishna, it's like one time they asked Kandamakanda Maharaj, they said, it was like a loaded question really, because there he is in front of all his disciples, and they ask him, you know, have you seen God? So if he says no, all the disciples will walk out and find somebody else as their guru. If he says yeah, then the reporter will think, he thinks he's something special, you know. So he answered in a really nice way. He said, I haven't seen God's face, but I've seen his hand many times. So that's understanding, actually, as a devotee, is if you can understand Krishna, then you will understand that he is playing a part in what's going on in your life, in everything that's taking place. His hand is there. And if you don't see his hand, then that's the beginning of misunderstanding Krishna, because you're not seeing that he's making an arrangement for you. You know, was Krishna off today? You know, I'm on Sankirtan, no one stopped for an hour. Krishna, are you up there? Are you taking a day off? Are you still God? You know, I'm down here, I haven't done a book for an hour, you know, come on. You know, and then you're not seeing his hand anymore. How he's doing it for a particular reason, or purifying you, or increasing your determination. So anyway, Prabhupada goes on to say pseudo-incarnations, and it reminded me of a story of a devotee that was in India, and he saw I think the person was a Hindu, he had an altar, and on the altar he had Jesus, and he had Kali, and Shiva, and Ganesh, and Krishna, and Vishnu, and Narayan, and Superman was also on the altar. It was a picture of Superman. So the devotee asked, he said, how come Superman's up there? And he said, well, he's blue and he's got a cape. And we just put everybody up to be on the safe side. You know, you don't know who's God these days. So we'll just pay our obeisances to everyone. One of them must be. So there's a good chance if I put everyone up, I'm bound to get the right one, right? So pseudo-incarnations, you know, some people think Superman is God, Spider-Man. And then it even gets that bad that if a guy can put a pair of shorts on and kick a ball round a field of grass, then he's God. All he has to do is get it between 2 posts. And then, and there's a funny story about that, actually. There was this penalty that had to be taken, and it was so loaded, the whole game depended upon this ball going in the net, so the whole crowd were like, you know. So he comes up and he kicks the ball, and he wants to kick the ball so that it just goes over the goalie's hands, you know, and goes in the back of the net. And he hits it, and it bounces on the top of the goalpost, but it goes straight up in the air. So the whole crowd goes, oh! And he's the guy that's kicked the ball, he's like, he's got his hand in his head, and the goalie's like, you know, he's so happy. And the goalie's like, and the ball goes right up in the air, but it comes right down, right in the just over the bar, and it bounces on a tuft of grass, and the tuft of grass is kind of facing like that. And as it bounces on the tuft of grass, it goes into the net. And this guy is like that. He suddenly hears the crowd going, yes! So then he looks up, and then he sees the crowd going, yeah. And then he realizes the ball's going in, and he's like... And he just wants to take all the credit. You know, he's suddenly, yeah, did you see that? That was me, yeah. And then the crowd's like, and then the goalie who was like that, he's like, oh. So everyone's jumping in trying to be God, trying to take the credit. And when it goes wrong, they want to take the credit. When it goes right, they want to take it. When it goes wrong, then it wasn't me, you know. It's just, oh, the wind was blowing the wrong way. But when it goes right, did you see that? That was me. I did that. I'm God. And they maybe don't realize consciously that that's what they're doing. But that's actually what's going on. They're the center of attention. They're the doer. They're the one that should get all the respect and the recognition. So they're being a pseudo-incarnation. They're maybe not getting arty, or maybe they are actually. Some of them, some of these football players, they worship them like anything, you know. So it's very important that the whole situation is clarified, that God isn't just somebody that kicks the ball and, you know, gets it in the net, you know, just by accident gets it in the net. Oh, well, that makes him... You know, this is where we're finding what God is he can play like a little boy, and then he can pull a little churning rod, mortar between two trees that have been standing there for 10,000, they were there for 10,000 years waiting for Krishna to come along. And then he comes along, and then the crack was that loud, it said that everybody fainted in Vrindavan, because it was just like an atom bomb going off, you know. Even the demigods could hear it. They come crashing down. That's God. Not just some, you know, little guy running around for a few years, and then he's old and dead in a few years. Nobody remembers him anyway. Anyway, so we should feel compassion. We should be very compassionate, actually, because we should think, well, you know, there go I, but for the grace, like it's saying in the purport, if it wasn't for a pure devotee, who would understand? And there we are. We all have some understanding. But the only reason we have some understanding is because Srila Prabhupada kindly came and his disciples kindly assisted him, and then the books got printed and distributed and we came in contact, you know. Otherwise, but for the grace of God, there go I, the grace of Guru. And an interesting thing, I'll just finish on this, so if there's any questions or comments, get them ready. It's just an interesting thing is when I was a fanatical bhakta, still a bit fanatical now, but I just thought, you know, well, look, this doesn't make sense, you know. I'd stump somebody and give them a book and say, you know, and say a few simple points, and they wouldn't get it, you know. And I think, well, why can't you get it, you know? It's so... Are you thick or something, you know? It used to be like that. But with understanding, a person's ability to understand and assimilate spiritual knowledge isn't based upon, you know, stopping the person and saying, look, 2 + 2 = 4, and that means that Krishna must be God. Anybody can see that. But it doesn't work like that, because your level of piety and your sukriti impairs assists, enhances your ability to understand these simple things, that you're not the body, that God must be a person, you have an eternal relationship with him, even the 4 regulative principles, understanding and accepting, yeah, I can see that that's important to follow those things. Well, that means there's a certain level of piety there already. And so for people in general, we can't just expect them to understand things so easily. So we engage them in devotional activity, we engage them in giving donations or taking prasad or hearing the holy name. And over a period of time, the sukriti starts to accumulate, and then they start to be able to understand, you know. And I find that myself. I go around businesses and I get to see the person, and we have these conversations that take place every year, you know. And then a year goes by, and then I go back and we carry on the conversation, and it goes a little bit further. And then a year goes by, and then we carry on the conversation, and it goes a little bit. And, you know, one year I said, yeah, you shouldn't eat animals. And then a year later, and then he says to me, what, you think I should go vegetarian? And then a year later, I say, yeah. And then a year later, he goes, Ram, I think I'll try that. And then a year later, he says, I've gone vegetarian. So after about like 6 years, he's finally gone, the penny's dropped, and he's gone vegetarian, you know. So it's a slow process. But he's got the books on his shelf, they're giving off the vibration. He's been purified from giving a donation. He's maybe mentioned, the Hare Krishna's come around and ask for a donation of me. He's said that. So he's accumulating his pious. And then he finally gets to the point where he asks a question. And I remember there was one man, he didn't want to give a donation because I said that Glenn Hoddle was right, because Glenn Hoddle got sacked for saying that mentally handicapped kids are mentally handicapped because they deserve it. So he lost his job because of that. So he said to me, "What do you think about Glenn Hoddle? Eh?" And I said, "Yeah, he's spot on." He goes, "Right, well, I'm not giving you a donation." So I went back to see him at the end of the day, and I said, "I just wanted to apologize." I said, "It's okay, you don't have to give a donation, I know that. But I just wanted to apologize because I was thinking about it, and karma is like a plate of spaghetti. You don't know where it begins and you don't know where it ends. So you can't just make these scathing statements. We should always be compassionate and treat people as being innocent, whatever. You know, it's like you go up to somebody right and hit them on the head with a cricket bat and say, "Well, it must have been your karma, otherwise I would have missed you." But we don't, we say, "You shouldn't have done that. He was just standing there and you hit him with a cricket bat. That's terrible, you know. We're going to have to lock you up for 15 years for that, you know." We assume that everyone's innocent, you know. So I said, "I just want to really help." And he appreciated it. And then the next year he did help. And he gave, and then now he's given quite a lot, actually. And now he understands about reincarnation and he can accept it. But at the time he couldn't. Whereas if I had just said, "Oh, well, that's your problem, you know," then he would have never helped again, and then he would have stayed in that level of misunderstanding. So we have to be very compassionate with people and see, okay, well, maybe they can't accept right now, but let me just engage them anyway. And if you can engage a person in devotional service, that's actually how you will defeat the person, not by shouting louder than him or being more logical or being cleverer than him. "You see, finally, you know." And you've smashed the person, you know. But you engage the person, he'll become purified, and then he'll be able to see. So it has to be very, very compassionate. This understanding isn't just something you can pick up. And last thing, sorry, I'll just finish with. When I was here a few years ago, Shishi Radha Gokinalanda Ki Jai, Sitara Maximan Hanuman Ki Jai, Shishi Gauri Tai Ki Jai, a devotee came up to me and he said, "Were you in Leeds in 2013? At 10:30, you know, on this day." And I said, I don't know. And he goes, "Yeah, I'm sure it was you." He goes, "Anyway," he said, "you gave me this book, Self-Realization." He said, "Took it back." He said, "I looked at it." He said, "I couldn't make head nor tail. Couldn't make head nor tail of it. But the one thing was, at the end, I thought, I think the guy that's wrote this book wants me to chant Hare Krishna." So he thought, "I'll give it a try, you know. He's gone through a whole rigmarole here, and I don't know what it means, but I'll try and chant." And he obviously wants me to chant Hare Krishna. So he chanted Hare Krishna for 6 months, and then he picked up the Science of Self-Realization, and then he could understand every word. And then he joined, became a devotee. So understanding isn't just, being clever or having bodily and mental gymnastics. But it's something which is revealed to us, and it's something that we have by grace, by mercy, and we should be really careful that we don't lose it. And it is possible to lose our understanding and misunderstand Krishna. So I will finish there. Thank you very much for your kind attention, and thank you also for being so hospitable. I feel really at home here. This is like being with my family. It's been so nice being back here, and we're hoping to see more of you again, and we're seeing how the place is blossoming and flourishing, and it's very enthusing and inspiring for us that ISKCON isn't just a windy barn on the hills of Lesmahago, but it's a big society full of very wonderful personalities, because we have some very wonderful personalities as well in Lesmahago, and we have some facility there also. Okay, so thank you. So questions, comments?